Okay, this is March 5th, 2016, or as I like to call it, Ides of March minus 10, since we're not going to actually record on March 15th. It's the middle of the week. So for those of you who observe that, for whatever reason...
I saw a great piece this morning that was, we have to remember that the spirit of the Ides of March isn't just to stab someone.
That's right.
To stab someone in groups.
And in the back, right?
Yeah, in the back. So unite and cause violence.
That's right. Anyhow, this is Mobile Views Podcast number 152. I'm Todd Ogasso, or my good friend, as usual, John Westfall.
Probably on rare days, I'm your bad friend.
That's right.
As usual, I'm your good friend.
Yeah, and some days scary, but oh well.
Yeah.
okay, probably a short podcast. We didn't have a lot of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, but nothing that really caught our eyes, I guess. One that I did find interesting, Apple, which is not known to be a social media maven, has...
Just because they've launched like 5 social media networks that have all failed miserably? I don't know why you'd say that.
Remember, what was it? Ping or whatever it was
called? Ping, and now there's Kinect and Apple Music that doesn't seem to be doing all that well. And
But they did launch an Apple support Twitter account. So if you need Apple support of some kind and you are on Twitter, it is at twitter.com/AppleSupport. Pretty easy to remember and type. They've only tweeted a few original things, you know, like tips and things, like three or four items that they've tweeted without, you know, being asked. But they've had thousands, it looks like thousands of interactions with people seeking some kind of Apple support or other. So
try it out. I did read something yesterday that was somewhere around 1,000 a day.
Yeah.
Or maybe even 1,000 an hour. It was a pretty high number.
Yeah. So twitter.com/AppleSupport if you are looking for Apple support on Twitter for some reason, like you're not near an Apple store or something. Mm-hmm. The next, you know, I don't know if we talked about this last week. I don't think so. But the Raspberry Pi group released their third Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi 3. Didn't 2 just come out recently? Like months ago?
But at least kudos to them for having very logical naming.
Yes. Yes. They're not going to go to Raspberry Pi Air and just Raspberry Pi with no number and so far.
And the new Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. Anyway, the new Raspberry Pi 3 looks really interesting. You know, I've got the original, which is honestly, it's very cool, but very slow. It's not something you would use for everyday computing. Like if you try to fire up its web browser, don't.
Yeah,
that's not what it's intended for.
I have my original Raspberry Pi sitting here on my desk, and same thoughts. Great for command line and server-side applications, but not very good for use.
Kind of like an Arduino that doesn't need an external computer for development. So it's cool if you're going to do that kind of stuff, I think.
Yeah.
You know, embedded controller kind of stuff. But this one looks like it can actually be I don't know about a desktop replacement, but certainly a desktop of some kind. If you need an emergency, it's got a quad core 64-bit ARM processor. It's got built-in Wi-Fi and built-in Bluetooth. Previously, that's something you would have to have added in using the SD slot. So it was an added cost. Basically, you'd have to spend, I don't know, what do those things cost? $10, $15, $20. But still, it almost, you know, given that the Raspberry Pi itself only costs $35, it basically doubles your cost just to add wireless. Now it's built in and it's way faster. I do not have one, but the people who've been playing with it say, it's pretty fast. The browser works pretty well. Linux-based system, of course. Raspbian, if I remember the name correctly. I always get the P's and the B's mixed up. But very cool. $35. Still $35, too.
Yeah. Definitely something to check out if you're interested in that whole thing or building an Internet of Things sort of product in any way.
Yeah. The next one is something that neither John nor I have used, but it's something that I've kept reading about for years and years, and that's MAME, which is an acronym for a multiple arcade machine emulator, which lets you play old arcade games. If you can somehow, and they don't say how you can get it, because technically it's illegal to get a lot of these, to extract the firmware from old games. But if you can extract the firmware, if you have, and don't tell us if you have extracted firmware from an old game, you know, from an old Atari or whatever, and you want to play it, but have nothing to play it on, MAME is the way to do it, and it's now free and open source. I always thought it was free. No, I mean open source, but apparently it's now official. It looks like they're using two different open source licenses, and I didn't read the details, but I know one is kind of a version of GPL2, and the other was something 3 open source 3 or something, some license I'd never heard of. But apparently they spent years getting, you know, basically they had to get permission from all the contributors to the project to open source it, and apparently they have now done so. And but they do have a little note saying, if you were a contributor and you did not agree to this open source thing yet, please contact us and let's work it out. So there you go.
Awesome. Yeah, I have a few emulators. I have OpenEMU on my Mac that I've used for, you know, NES games and things like that, but I have not played with MAME. I know I might have played with it years ago, but I haven't played with it any time recently. My favorite emulator that I picked up years ago, I have no idea where I picked this up, was an Apple IIe emulator.
Oh, that's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, so I have that, and I have the original Oregon Trail that I can play on that. So that's good for some nostalgia.
Neat. Okay, now from something old to something new, and John has a rant after this, but we'll get to that in a minute. So I wrote an article for Extreme Tech this past week because Amazon released not one, but 2 devices related to the original Amazon Echo. One is called the Amazon Echo Dot, and the other is called the Amazon App, no Echo. And there's a reason for that. So Amazon Echo Dot, if you look at it, looks like a shrunken version of the original Echo. Now, the original Echo's a little over 9 inches tall. It's a tall cylinder. The new one's only 1.5 inches, and the reason is the difference between the two is basically the Amazon Echo Dot has tiny speakers because it's tiny. It's only 1.5 inches. And the second is you can plug in an external speaker. In fact, that's its primary use in life. You plug in, you know, or use a Bluetooth speakers. Use whatever speakers you have for the most part that you plug in via mini plug or connect wirelessly via Bluetooth. And for half the price, it's, you know, this couple of cents under $90 versus $180 for the original Echo. You have Alexa. I just woke her up. Sorry, Alexa, cancel.
Go ahead with your question.
Cancel Alexa. Anyhow, sorry to wake you up. Anyhow, you have you know who at your disposal with a very tiny, you know, tiny form for it. It is not battery powered, interestingly enough. It is transportable, but not portable. You see, apparently power. It does have a USB charging port, so I guess you can plug your speaker into it and charge it at the same time you are using it, so your speaker doesn't die in the middle of your listening pleasure. It's kind of neat. If I didn't already have an Echo, I would seriously consider the Echo Dot. I'm not sure what speakers I'd plug into because I really don't have good speakers. And quite honestly, the Amazon's Echo speaker is pretty darn good. It's not stereo, obviously. You know, it's just a cylinder, right? But it's quite nice. It has a separate tweeter and separate woofer. So I think it's about 3 watts in power. It's very nice. You know, if you're not, you know, listening to, you know, death metal rock or something. Now, the Amazon Tap, I don't understand that at all. So the Amazon Tap looks like a slightly shrunken version of Echo. It's about, I think, 7 inches tall or so. It's about two-thirds the width. Basically, it's two-thirds the width and height and diameter of the Echo. And it's battery-powered. So you carry it kind of like you carry, you know, like a thermos cup around that you sip water out of or coffee. And it has its own speaker, although it doesn't have separate woofers and tweeter like the Echo itself does. So, you know, and it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't have the woofer especially. So it has, you know, some kind of like passive system to get the low frequency stuff. But the weirdest thing is it's not voice activated in the sense that the Echo and Echo Dot are. You don't say, you know, the keyword and wake up the Echo. Basically, you tap, like the name says, Amazon Tap. You tap a button on the front of the cylinder. And then you speak, kind of like a walkie-talkie. So, I'm not sure. Well, I'm not sure really what the use case is. John, you're younger than me. Maybe you can figure this out. So, I was thinking like a boombox from the 20th century. You know, where you wanted to share your music with random strangers.
It seems like a Bluetooth speaker and your smartphone that you're probably already carrying would do just as well, and maybe more. So, I'm looking at it, too, and I'm kind of confused. First of all, there's a picture of it on the beach.
Yeah.
And
it is battery-powered.
Great, but how many beaches do you know have Wi-Fi?
I actually know a few. In Hawaii, we do have beaches with Wi-Fi on it, public Wi-Fi.
How would one pair this to a Wi-Fi network that it's never been on before. I mean, I assume you then have to have your phone with you to configure it.
I'm going to guess you need the Alexa app on your smart device, on your phone or tablet. You're carrying a lot of stuff.
Yeah, why wouldn't I just carry a Bluetooth speaker and use my phone that already has a Wi-Fi connection and can probably do a lot more than this thing can? And if I'm going to carry something that has the basically the footprint of a water bottle to the beach, it's probably going to be a water bottle. Yeah. It's probably not going to be another speaker or a limited speaker in this sense. I might bring, you know, I have a little Jabra Jambox over here, or Jawbone Jambox. I forget who made the Jambox. I've got it over here. And I take that places, but I wouldn't necessarily take that and this.
Yeah.
It just seems like if I'm going to take my phone already, I'm going to just want a regular speaker. I'm not going to want another speaker that can only do certain things.
Yeah, I'm not getting the Amazon Tap at all. I'm probably not the demographic they're aiming at, so I'll accept that. But if somebody can explain to John and me, because John, who's much younger than I am, apparently does not demographic for it either. If somebody can explain it to John and me, it being what its appeal is and what group it appeals to, I'm thinking, like I said, the 21st century of the version of the 20th century boombox is what I'm thinking.
I just think we have that already with Bluetooth speakers.
Yeah, it's a hard one to figure. On the other hand, the Echo Dot, I really like this idea. Oh, one other thing about the Echo Dot. This is a really weird part. If you want to order an Amazon Echo Dot, you have to have an Echo.
I saw some way around this, but still.
Yeah, there's a workaround of some kind. But the easiest way, you know, the most straightforward way, and the way Amazon wants you to do it, is to use your current Echo to order the new Echo Dot, which I'm considering doing.
And you better not say exactly what the magical.
No, I can't say it because otherwise you know who's going to wake up and order it for me.
Yes, it's just it'll show up and you'll wonder where that $90 charge on your credit card came from.
Right. On the other hand, you know, I was just thinking I'd surprise my daughter when she comes home from college this summer and have one in her room ready for her. So I might pick up a Dot for her to use during the summer.
You know who to ask.
Speaking of our buddy. You know, if you watch the Super Bowl.
Your buddy.
Yeah, that's right. You don't have an Echo. If you watch the Super Bowl, I only watch part of the Super Bowl. But if you watch the commercials from the Super Bowl, you remember that Amazon actually had an Echo ad in which, let's see, who was on it? It was Alec Baldwin and let's see, Dan Marino from the Dolphins. Right? Mm-hmm. Dolphins. Could be wrong. It's been a long time. Any rate, it was a pretty funny spot, and I wondered what would happen if you asked the Echo about them. So this is what happens when you ask the Echo a similar question to what was asked on the Super Bowl. Alexa, how many Academy Awards has Alec Baldwin won?
Alec Baldwin has won no Oscars.
Alexa, stop.
Alec, is that you? How did you get here?
So, and also, Alexa, how many Super Bowls has Dan Marino won? Oh, Alexa. How many Super Bowls has Dan Marino won? Oh, Alexa's being really annoying.
Ask her to order you an Echo Dot.
In any case, Alexa. Wow, she's not waking up. I wonder if something's wrong with it. Maybe it's mad at me for talking so much about it.
You killed Alexa.
Anyhow, now, John, we've been talking about the Echo Dot and Tab. And, John, you have kind of a rant about Amazon, right?
I'm not going to be having my BFF Alexa over anytime soon because Amazon apparently has a very strange view toward privacy. And I find that strange because Amazon makes devices that listen to you all the time, yeah. Just hoping that you will say, Alexa, order an Echo Dot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can say that just fine. Todd cannot.
Yeah, I can't say that out loud.
And I apologize to anyone who might listen to this. I've just ordered one. I'm not paying for it, though. Anyway, this week, Amazon released an update to the Fire tablets that removed disk encryption.
Yep.
and basically a day later released a statement saying, oh, okay, apparently people care about this whole disk encryption thing right now, so we'll bring it back in a future update.
Right.
This just seems like a very bizarre decision to make when disk encryption is not something that Amazon had to build specifically for Android. Android does support it. It was something that Amazon took out, apparently due to lack of use scenarios.
Yep.
It's a weird time to take it out when Apple and the rest of the tech community are basically saying encryption is a right that people should have with our products, and here comes Amazon saying, eh, you know what, we'll just take it out because no one wants to use it anyway. So I don't know. I think Amazon, you know, I'm an Amazon customer for over 16 years now. I'm a happy Amazon customer when it comes to ordering things and having them show up at my door, but I have no desire to use any of their products other than their, you know, things that they could do 10 years ago.
See, this is why my Echo won't talk to me now, because you say things like that.
Alexa, forgive Todd. So yeah, that's just my mini rant, is that I don't trust Amazon's connected devices.
Well, you know, that is a, I don't know if I would say it's a common concern, but it is certainly a concern expressed by people familiar with technology and some of the Internet of Things issues that are going on now, like home security cameras being accessed by external unknown entities, those sort of things.
Yeah, you posted something on social media the other night on that, and I actually fired up Wireshark just to look at my cameras to see if they were talking.
Yeah, and they were. Yeah, you know, I didn't include it in our rundown, but I guess a week and a half ago, I noticed a news item that actually came out in early February about Foscam, F-O-S-C-A-M brand cameras, basically sending a lot of traffic to China for no apparent reason. You know, in other words, a reason that you wouldn't have any reason. You're not sending any, you know, video there for storage or whatever. Now, as it turns out, I have bought a Foscam webcam. I have not plugged it in yet, so you know, I need to go research the serial number and all that sort of thing to find out what it is that this one might do. I don't know if it's all Foscam webcams or just certain models.
I mean, I know some of them actually route through China for a dynamic DNS service.
It's possible,
that is routed there, so that if you don't really, if you're not comfortable opening up ports or things like that, you're not sure what your IP address is, all of that.
Right.
I think some of them do that sort of tunneling, because I've disabled that on some of my cameras.
Right. I think the NIST cams or one of those kind of cams do that. But they tell you they do that. This one did not say anywhere in the documentation. I think it was a Bruce Schneider thing. So it was written by, you know, one of these people actually knows what he's talking about versus me. but anyway, it's something of concern. Mine is still sealed in a box. I need to go do some research. If you have a Foscam, you might want to go look up. I think Bruce Schneier did an article about this. If not, just look up Foscam China web security, and you'll probably get some much better information than something that I don't have linked in our show notes right now. But it is of concern. The Amazon security removal or encryption removal from its Fire OS stuff, that was kind of weird. They claimed, like John said, that nobody was using it. I find that hard to believe. Maybe they should have just turned it on, you know, like Apple does, right?
Yeah. Well, that is the thing. All of these no one really used because they weren't on by default. But when you make it on by default, defaults have extremely powerful effects, as many of my colleagues have found in research. So,
yeah.
If no one's using it, might be because you didn't really turn it on for them or tell them about it.
Yeah, I mean, and this was a problem in Windows many years ago, Windows XP, right, pre-Service Pack 3, where the firewall, the software firewall in Windows was turned off by default, and or maybe didn't even exist, I don't remember. Back in the bad old days, so to speak, before we kind of had this whole home security stuff, not nailed, we still don't, you know, obviously we still have problems with people accessing webcams and, you know, baby cams and those sort of things. But I think we've gotten better. So, you know, when you plug in, you're reasonably safe these days. But we'll see. Okay.
I agree.
And unless John has anything, I've only got one more thing in our rundown. And basically, it's a mini podcast I recorded last night. So MobileView's mini podcast number 27. I picked up this I'm gonna say my apologies to August, the brand, the maker of these earbuds. I've never heard of them, so I'll say they're a no-name brand. They're not a Bose or Apple or, you know, whoever. But anyway, it's called August EP 715 active noise canceling earphones. I was looking for earbud style noise canceling earphones to take with me on a trip. I have some old noise canceling headphones, but they're giant ones, you know, with the cans or medium-sized cans versus earbuds. So I thought this was under $40 from Amazon, so I thought I'd pick it up. It's kind of weird looking because it is active. It does have a AAA battery, and I'm kind of showing it to John now. I don't know if you can see it on the camera. But it's got this AAA battery and a little plastic case that plugs in via micro USB, where kind of connected to the 3.5-millimeter earphone jack. And it goes up to a lapel clip, which has a microphone, a power indicator, an on-off switch, and a pause play button. No volume control, which is kind of interesting. So I tested it last night. You know, I kind of turned on a fan in the house and put my head kind of near it and to see if it would start canceling some of the low frequency stuff. I didn't think it did, but, you know, I'll do some more testing, and I'm going to take it with me my next trip and see how well it works. It seems like it just increased the volume a little, which is okay. I mean, you know, that's a good thing too when you're in an airplane. The earbuds are actually very comfortable. I was kind of surprised because most times I have to change the little rubber piece. But this only comes with one little rubber piece, so if it doesn't fit, you're kind of out of luck. The battery canister is kind of a weird thing, though. It just kind of dangles there, and I'm wondering how much strain it puts on it. And I don't quite know where to put it when I'm wearing it, so I need to think about this. You can use it without the battery, but then it's got no noise cancellation features. You know, it's just a headphone. But as headphones go, it seems okay. The recording, I thought, was a little bit choppy. I think it's because the microphone is in a lapel clip, and it was bouncing as I was walking around outside last night trying to test it. But you can go to iTunes or your favorite podcasting thing and download Mini Podcast 27, see what it sounds like. Speaking of podcasts, you know, Google was supposed to launch a podcast service as part of their Google Play, but... And I signed up for it like last September, but so far nothing. So,
well, they could just be shunning you, Todd.
It could be.
There could be this whole service out there that we all know about that it's a Todd.
I don't know about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of waiting for that. So those of you who prefer to subscribe through, or, you know, or can't subscribe through iTunes, subscribe through Google. And I have not tried to put it on places like. What's Microsoft? So it used to be Zune. What is it called now? Nobody
cares. I never remember Microsoft.
Yeah, nobody cares. Anyway, it's not even worth it. We can't even remember what it's called. But they used to have some kind of podcast thing. And, of course, you can always just go to mobileviews.com, which hopefully you are now, and click on things, click on ads and things. And sometimes John and I link stuff to Amazon, so you know, that helps defray. Actually, nothing. We've made like 0 cents probably from those links.
Exactly.
But there's always hope. There's always hope you will actually click on a link.
Eventually, someone will pay us, probably to just say whatever they want us to say, which, as we've said many times in the past, we're fine with.
Or if you want to pay us not to say anything.
Yeah, that too.
We're good for that. Like, don't talk about our product because we really don't want you to.
Yeah, that's fine too.
Yeah.
There'll be some very conspicuous products we're not talking about anymore. Products that have less than 1% of the market share. We will not mention them anymore. We can be paid to not speak of any sort of product that might also be named after something in your house or something on the side of your house that you might be able to see through. Set a pie on the sill of. Yeah, you know, all of those things. We could be paid. We could be paid not to speak of that.
You know, one last thing, since this is a short podcast, usually I don't try to add things to it at the end, but I do want to mention, I've been reading, or I should say I've been listening to this book. I listen to Audible books. I don't actually read with my eyes anymore. I've been listening to a book on Audible by the founder or co-founder of Pixar, Ed Catmull. It's called Creativity Inc. And it's about, you know, it's kind of a combination business book, business philosophy book / history of Pixar. And really, I bought it for the history of Pixar side. But anyway, the interesting thing that I thought John would find amusing is he tells a story about halfway through the book about Toy Story 2. And they use Unix-based machines, as you might guess, to do all their rendering and things. And one day, somebody with root access typed in RF space dash RF space asterisk.
Yeah, I've heard this unfortunate story before about Toy Story 2.
And literally everything got erased. 2 years of work.
Yeah.
Was erased. And then they found out their backup system was not working.
Yes. The pit of the stomach feeling that every system administrator has had, because I don't think there's any one of us out there that has not lost data and had to retrieve it from the backups.
Yes.
Or, I think probably even more accurately, there are none of us out there who haven't accidentally lost data ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
From the backups.
None of us are perfect. At least, John and I don't claim to be perfect.
Yeah, no. I have had my fair share of moments where I've typed a command and immediately hit Control C or Control Z to stop it as quickly as I can.
Or unplug the machine.
What it's doing. You know, I've done massive permissions changes by mistake. And yeah, just things like that. So that's definitely a horror story, but I'm glad you got to hear about it or read about it from a first-hand source. I bet that's an interesting.
It is.
I bet
interesting.
He has interesting thoughts on it.
Well, you know, the other thing I found interesting, and I think you might too, John, is that, you know, of the all and various actions and reactions they had to this event, the one thing they did not do is seek out and punish the person who did it. Which I found fascinating, because he thought it would ruin the corporate culture if people did not feel free to do the things they needed to do to get the job done, even if it causes a disaster like that. Now, they may have had a different view of this find and punish thing, which they did not do, had they not actually found a way to recover their files, which is also interesting. But I will
We'll let everyone else read that.
Right. I will let you read the book or as I do, listen to the Audible version. But anyway, it's a really interesting read. And I'm, like I said, halfway through the book now. And it is, again, called Creativity, Inc. by Amy Wallace and Ed Catmull. Ed Catmull is the founder of Pixar. He's the guy, basically, that Steve Jobs came to with money in hand to save Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
Which he also relates, which is also a fascinating story about Steve Jobs, if you're at all
I will say, again, if anyone has not read the Walter Isaacson Steve Jobs book, that is definitely a good read to read if you're also interested in Pixar.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of Pixar stuff in there.
That is a wonderful book. I know it's been criticized by a number of people, but I will go on record saying I enjoyed that book immensely. And I normally don't read biographies. It's not sort of the thing I do, although I have recently done so. But I think that one is the one that convinced me that biographies, you know, that might be interesting for me to read or listen to. So, yeah, I heartily agree with that. Okay, so Mobius 152, we kind of meandered around the place and still managed to take up 30 minutes of time or thereabouts, as John and I normally do. I will continue to do a couple of mini mobile views, mini podcasts to test microphones and things. I'm trying to get ready to figure out how to podcast while traveling. John and I are still trying to figure this out since I'll be gone a little over a week. But I think John is gone too. That one of the weekends I'm gone. So
yeah, so it'll work out well. We'll do something. Maybe we'll both record independent mini podcasts.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Something like that.
I like that. So. Yeah, I'll be podcasting from Scotland for a couple of days, maybe. All righty.
Very good.
And that is it, folks. We will talk to you next time.